From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United States Supreme Court on Tuesday handed down a stunning ruling in a blow to the due process rights of undocumented immigrants. In a 5-3 decision, justices invalidated a decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, arguing that detained immigrants should be granted bond hearings every 6 months. After the death of Justice Antonin Scalia, the case had resulted in a vote tie at the court. But now with Donald Trump's appointee Neil Gorsuch on the court, and with Justice Elena Kagan recusing herself, the ruling came down on the side of anti-immigrant forces. My guest Grizel Ruiz, a staff attorney for the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, responded to the decision, saying, quote, "This Supreme Court decision reaffirms that there is no such thing as a fair day in court for immigrants." Welcome to the program, Grizel.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So first explain what it was that the lower court had decided, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And we're talking here about undocumented immigrants that are detained. They're technically not supposed to be seen as incarcerated individuals. They haven't been convicted of breaking any crime, you know, committing any crimes. They're being detained for civil violations. And these are the people at stake here, right?
Yes, correct. So really what we're talking about is folks who are in civil deportation proceedings. So folks who could be in custody could be all sorts of people. It could be asylum seekers. It could be refugees. It could be green card holders who may be deportable for some reason. So in terms of the folks who are actually incarcerated, awaiting and fighting their deportation cases, it really runs the gamut in terms of what we see. Another thing that's actually very important to remember, too, is that these individuals, in large part, are unrepresented. So in immigration proceedings, in civil immigration proceedings, we don't have the same rights to counsel that we do in criminal proceedings. So technically, we do have a right to counsel, but not at the government's appointment, meaning that if somebody can't afford an attorney, they don't get one. We don't have public defenders. As a result, it turns out that roughly 84-85% of people who are detained fighting their deportation cases are totally unrepresented. And essentially what the lower court had found, or what the Ninth Circuit had found, is that folks who are subject to mandatory detention, and by mandatory detention, I mean some statutes that we have back from around 1996 that basically say that certain people in removal proceedings are required to be detained for the duration of their case, meaning that they don't even have the right to even ask a judge for a bond hearing. So here we're not even talking about the absolute right to bond. We're just talking about the right to go in front of a judge and even request and ask for a bond. And because we have these statutes that essentially say that a pretty large swath of individuals are subject to mandatory detention, in other words, they have to fight their case detained for sometimes months or sometimes even years, the Ninth Circuit had said, no, that's not okay for a series of legal reasons. And at 6 months, everybody needs to get a bond hearing. So essentially, that's the practice that we had had here in the Ninth Circuit for several years, is that folks who were detained, even folks who were subject to mandatory detention, everybody at the very least got the opportunity to request a bond hearing in front of an immigration judge at the 6 month mark.
Right. So it wasn't the case that people had the right to be removed from or relieved their detention situation. They simply, by the Ninth Circuit Court, had a right to ask for it, and now the Supreme Court is saying that they don't have that right. Now, the situation on the ground, the practical situation, has changed dramatically over the past 10 years or so, right? I mean, it began under George W. Bush, continued under Obama, that we began detaining more and more undocumented immigrants or immigrants for a variety of reasons. We've seen a growth in the private prison industry that specializes in immigrant detention, but these are the same companies that, of course, build prisons for convicted people convicted of committing crimes. So on the ground, we're talking about growing numbers of people. And under Trump, that number has gone even higher, hasn't it?
The immigration arrests are going up. And I think that it is important to remember the environment in which a decision like this comes down. So we are receiving this decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, and by the way, this decision came down yesterday,
and we've been hearing Tuesday, yes.
correct. And we've been hearing that immigration judges across the board have, in many, many places, have already ended these Rodriguez. They were called Rodriguez hearings. The Ninth Circuit case was Rodriguez. So these bond hearings have almost instantly stopped, at least with the, wow, with the practitioners on the ground that we've checked in with. And this comes during a time when we have a federal administration that is going going after immigrants in unprecedented ways. Mm. You know, not only have immigration arrests gone up, but tactics have also gotten worse. And in fact, there's a rally here in San Francisco today in response to the 150 ICE arrests that we've had in Northern California in the past few days.
So essentially, who wins with such a ruling is the private prison industry that is being that is receiving government contracts to build more prisons, because, you know, with this ruling, you're going to see continued indefinite detention of undocumented immigrants. The numbers of arrests are increasing, so that population that's been put behind bars keeps increasing. So you need to spend money to hold them behind bars instead of allowing these people, most of whom are no threat to American society, to simply stay with their relatives in the country while their case is being heard. We're spending money as a country to keep them locked up.
Correct. That's absolutely right. In terms of the people who profit, quite literally, there are private prison industries who are profiting because they are actually making money off of building and expanding immigration jails. Our organization, the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, in tandem with Civic, co-sponsored a bill, the Dignity Not Detention Act, which passed in California and is now law. That was a bill authored by State Senator Ricardo Lara. We also had the support of many groups on the ground. For example, CJA and IYC, two immigrant-based groups here in California, also were very active. And essentially what that bill and another bill, AB 103, did was halt the expansion of most types of immigration jail contracts here in California. So because we have seen that this is a rising trend, because we have seen that this is something that the Trump administration is focusing on, we had wanted to ensure that California at least wouldn't be party to this essentially moral practice. And now with the Supreme Court's decision, we're going to see this practice increase, unfortunately.
Now, why did Justice Elena Kagan recuse herself? Although, of course, even if she hadn't, it's likely that it would have passed because of the ruling would have stood because of Gorsuch's presence. It was a 5-3 ruling, and it might have been a 5-4 had Elena Kagan voted, right?
Correct. I'm actually not certain as to the reason that she recused herself, but I agree that most likely we would have ended up with a similar decision.
And of course, with Scalia's death, when the case first came before the court, there was a 4-4 tie. And this is exactly the kind of thing that the Trump administration and the Republican Party that pushed Trump to appoint Gorsuch has wanted, this sort of judicial activism where they know if they get a sufficiently conservative anti-immigrant justice on the Supreme Court, they will get these kinds of decisions that have very serious repercussions for a long time.
Absolutely. The Republicans brought in a judge who they knew would vote it the way they wanted him to.
Yeah.
And that's now, what they got.
Now, let's talk about whether this is the end of the line or not. What happens now? Does this ruling essentially mean that somebody who has been detained for more than 6 months, who has not been, you know, convicted of any kind of a crime or even accused of a crime, has absolutely no idea when they could be released? Or is there any other legal recourse?
Sure. So there are a few different responses here. So to start the case, essentially what the Supreme Court said is that there's no requirement for periodic 6-month bond hearings. With that, they remanded back to the Ninth Circuit to discuss some of the constitutional issues that the Ninth Circuit hadn't gotten to in their initial decision. So that the case is currently being remanded. So we'll see more litigation at the Ninth Circuit on this issue. In the meantime, these bond hearings have stopped because the Supreme Court has said that they're not required, essentially. And so now, we've heard this anecdotally, but we've heard that certain people who are actually incarcerated in these immigration jails are scared because folks are already starting to hear about this decision. News spreads, can spread very quickly, and people are frightened. essentially what that means for individuals who would have benefited from the opportunity to even request a bond hearing are now not going to have that chance, which means that in essence they're going to have to stay incarcerated for upwards of many months, maybe even many years, as they fight their immigration cases.
Wow.
The practical effect is that sometimes we see people give up and take deportation orders, even on strong cases, rather than stay incarcerated, because for some people, this could be the first time that they are incarcerated. So if you can only imagine, let's say you're an asylum seeker who has been tortured in their home country or who has had horrible things happen to them in their home country. Here you are fighting an asylum case in the United States and we incarcerate you. If you can only imagine what that does to a person psychologically, even if they are facing certain danger in their home country, the trauma of being incarcerated here can often lead people to give up on their cases. And
Now, ACLU attorney Ahilan Arulanthanam, who argued the Supreme Court case, said, "We've shown through this case that when immigrants get a fair hearing, judges often release them based on their individual circumstances." And I want to ask you this. So, you mentioned that the bond hearings had already started to dry up and now they've completely stopped. But when they were happening, was it the case that immigrants more often than not were actually being able to get released through bond hearings?
Here I think it's another case where an attorney makes a huge difference. So again, because we don't have public defenders in deportation cases, the individuals who had an attorney representing them during a bond hearing had a much higher rate of success. Obviously, if you can only imagine, I'm reminded right now we're in tax season and many people refer to immigration law as the most complex area of law, second only to tax. So if you can only imagine having to wade through this quagmire of very, very complex immigration law when you're incarcerated without an attorney, possibly with a low level of education, possibly English might be your second language. And even if none of those factors are present, can you imagine how confusing it is? So for folks who are represented, we have a much higher rate of approval. There is Stanford actually came out with a study several years ago comparing the rates of success with an attorney or not, and it went up significantly with an attorney. Just note that immigration judges do weigh two things when they are deciding a bond case. They are looking at whether a person is a flight risk and whether a person is a danger to the community. So those are two factors that judges are looking before they're even deciding, as they're deciding whether or not bond should even be granted.
So it's very possible that a large number among those being held in these detention centers, which are de facto prisons, could be freed had they, if they had access to legal representation, of course, and also if the Supreme Court hadn't ruled the way that it just did. Now, this all leads to the question of why don't undocumented immigrants have the same constitutional rights of due process that Americans do? And is this a big part of the question, the constitutionality? Because, we pride ourselves in this country that if you are arrested for and accused of a crime, that you get your day in court. If you can't afford an attorney, one will be appointed to you. You will not be indefinitely incarcerated. You have the right for legal representation and your day in court. Apparently, undocumented immigrants don't get those rights.
So folks in deportation proceedings, in civil immigration proceedings, don't have the same protections. And this really comes down to the fact that our rights that we get in criminal proceedings, and by the way, I don't want to discount the fact that our criminal justice system also has its own issues.
Absolutely.
But the rights that we have in the criminal justice system are hinged in the Constitution in a way that doesn't quite apply in the immigration context. So immigration proceedings are civil. We have some protections, but not the same protections. So just by way of some of the examples, if an ICE agent arrests an individual, they're not required to Mirandize them the way you are in a criminal arrest.
So that means they read their rights, yeah.
Correct. They're not told that they have the right to remain silent. So even though we have that right, we have the right to remain silent in the immigration context, individuals aren't Mirandized, so they're not required to be told a right and told that they have that right. And, what's the point of a right if you don't know that you have it and if you don't exercise it, or you don't have the opportunity to exercise it. So there are a bevy of different places where we don't, unfortunately, have the same protection.
And yet, of course, our system, our government, treats immigrants in the same way that they treat convicted criminals. So on the ground, they are imprisoned, even if the legal term is slightly different, detained versus incarcerated. Who is being held? We talked about the fact that numbers have been increasing. Are we talking about primarily men, undocumented male immigrants? Under Obama, under George W. Bush and Obama, we saw a family detention. Does this apply to women and children, mothers and children as well?
Family detention does continue. We don't have any family detention centers in California. In California, we have approximately 10 immigration jails. We actually also have one of the only juvenile immigration jails in the country. So juveniles, oftentimes they can be placed in different settings. Oftentimes they'll be released to family members. But there are some circumstances where juveniles in deportation proceedings are actually placed in secure facilities. They're placed in jails. And again, we have one of the only youth immigration jails in the country.
What about the rest of the country in terms of family detention?
Yeah, we have some family detention centers in other parts of the country. So that is a practice that went away and then came back in more recent years.
And Supreme Court ruling would apply to family detention as well?
So it would, the individual themselves would have the same, so if the mother, the father would be affected by this case equally. Yeah. So typically those individuals would be facing their own deportation case. There are circumstances where families might be joined in certain situations, but yes, the mothers or fathers would be affected.
So we're talking about a growing population of people that are imprisoned, that include families, that include children, babies in some situations, all of whom have now been told by the Supreme Court they do not have the right to have a bond hearing every 6 months and simply can be held in this black hole until at some point their case comes before a court. Quite incredible. Grizel, give out a website for the Immigrant Legal Resource Center so people can find out more information.
Sure. You can find more information on our website at www.ilrc.org. And just a quick note of clarification. Children oftentimes will be able to be released under different circumstances. I think the large population who's going to be affected by this decision are because the individuals who are subject to mandatory detention will often be people with certain criminal offenses. So for example, two petty thefts from a very long time ago could trigger mandatory detention. But you know, really what we're seeing is it is going to have very real life consequences on the ground.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Grizel.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Grizel Ruiz is a staff attorney with the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. We've been discussing the Supreme Court's decision that undermines due process rights for detained immigrants. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.